Stay with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sulis. Interested in learning new skills online at a pace that suits you? Visit ecollege.ie to apply for one of our free online courses.
Now, Shamima Begum's appeal over the removal of her UK citizenship for joining Islamic State began in London this week. Shamima Begum was 15 years old when she and two other London schoolgirls travelled to join the terrorist group in February of 2015. Her British citizenship was revoked on national security grounds shortly after she was found when she was 9 months pregnant in a Syrian refugee camp in February of 2019. Now aged 23, Shamima claims she regrets her decision, was trafficked and never committed any violence, but the British government says she is a danger and should not return to the UK. Well, for more than a year, Joshua Baker has been piecing together Shamima's story for the BBC's I'm Not a Monster podcast, and he joins us now. Good morning, Joshua. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. No, not at all. Lovely to be here.
So this is the final day of the appeal hearing. It ran all week. It started on Monday at the Special Immigration Appeals Commission, and you were there. So what's it been like? What's been happening?
I mean, so it's quite an interesting place, really, to be honest with you, in the sense that not all of the hearing is an open hearing. Parts of it are held in secret, and we're not really aware what's chatted about there. That's where the sort of secret evidence gathered by intelligence services is discussed. But in essence, there are sort of two key arguments being debated here. Now, on the position of her lawyers, they say that, look, when the British government took away Shamima Begum's citizenship, they failed to consider that she was a victim of trafficking, and that any acts that she then went on to be involved with need to be seen through that prism. Now, at the other end of the spectrum, obviously the British government disputes that, and they have said you can be both a victim but also a threat. And their case centres around the threat that Shamima Begum could pose to the UK. And they say that outweighs anything else, and therefore the decision was correct.
Mm-hmm. And remind us, I outlined briefly the circumstances around her decisions to leave and what happened around that time. But will you go back almost 8 years ago now and explain to us what happened, what we know of what happened?
Absolutely. I mean, it's crazy, isn't it, that it's been going on this long. But so in February of 2015, Shamima Begum left London with her two school friends. They flew from Gatwick Airport to Istanbul in Turkey. Now, once there, they met up with a IS people smuggler. They then made their way through the country and into the sort of IS-controlled, war-torn Syria. Now, at that point, they sort of disappeared from the media. Nobody really knew if they were alive or not. Until 2019, when Shamima Begum emerged from the ashes of the so-called ISIS caliphate. At that point, she was catapulted back into the world's attention, and the British government decided she was a threat, took away her citizenship, and she's been in a detention camp in Syria ever since.
Mm-hmm. And more details have emerged around the lead-up to her decision at the age of 15. Her friend and schoolmate, Sharmina Begum, she travelled there before her, a couple of months beforehand.
That's correct, yeah. So Sharmina left in early December of 2014. And in essence, what Shamima has said to me is that while she was in the UK, she was receiving messages from people like Sharmina that were detailed. They were telling her how to get there. They were sort of selling her this idea of, you know, a sort of utopian society, if you will, that she should come to. Now, not only that, those contacts provided some of the key details about what would be needed to get there. So I mentioned earlier that when Shamima landed in Istanbul, she met up with an IS people smuggler. We've been in Turkey and sort of retraced that route. And what we've been able to uncover is that this man was at the centre of a highly organised smuggling network that was moving men, women and children to Syria. But we were also able to obtain some secretive documents and speak to some members of the intelligence community. And what we discovered is this man was, yes, working for ISIS, but he was also providing intelligence to the Canadian intelligence agency. Mm-hmm. So in essence, he was spying for Canada.
Tell me a little bit about her. And you mentioned your interview with her for your podcast, which is out in January, isn't it? The 10th of January. This is the I'm Not a Monster podcast, which people will be able to find on BBC Sounds. What was she like? What did she say to you?
So, I mean, I came to this story in a sort of bizarre way in that when she left, I was actually working in the East London Mosque on a separate documentary. Now, that's the mosque in her community. So I got to meet her family sort of on day one, if you will. And then since then, I've charted her story. So when I finally sort of sat down with her about a year ago in northeastern Syria for what would be the first, probably more than 10 interviews, we sort of had this bizarre history of both experiencing the same event from different perspectives. And it's been very interesting talking to Shamima, because in a lot of ways, it feels like she is somebody that is very much wrestling with her identity. You see glimpses of times of the 15-year-old girl who left. You see parts of the person who obviously matured through her time with ISIS. And then you see somebody today who does seem to have a lot of regret for what she's been involved with.
Mm-hmm. And she expressed that regret for joining Islamic State, even though in the quite recent past she has been interviewed about terrorist attacks and people have said that her views seem ambiguous.
Absolutely. So in 2019, when she was found by the Times journalist Anthony Lloyd, she, and in that interview and subsequent interviews, she did express some very problematic views about the actions of the Islamic State in certain terror attacks. And that fed into, I believe, the government's decision to consider her a threat and take away her citizenship. Today, I think she's had a lot of time to reflect on those statements, certainly regrets them. I think she's still trying to come to terms with her part within ISIS and what the responsibility of that really looks like.
Mm-hmm. What are the allegations around what she was doing at the height of the ISIS movement?
So there have been a number in the media. Things like, you know, Shamima Begum was part of what's called Hizba, which is ISIS's religious police. And things like Shamima Begum helped to sew suicide vests and things of that nature. The problem is there's not necessarily that much evidence of those things. And so you've got the more extreme allegations like that. But at the other end of the spectrum, you have the fact that, you know, simply put, this lady aligned herself with a terror group that was committing acts like genocide. So there are a number of allegations that we explore in the podcast.
She had three children, none of whom survived.
That's correct. She, she's, you know, as you said at the beginning of this, she's 23 years old. She's lost three kids. Her last one died within, I think, 10 days of her emerging from the caliphate in 2019 and is buried in the camp that she now resides in northeastern Syria.
What happened to the man she married?
So he is still in Syria. He is in a separate detention facility in northeastern Syria and has, again, been there ever since she walked out of the caliphate. And I think it is certainly at this time unlikely that he's going back to Holland, where he's from, anytime soon.
He's Dutch. And then the other two people central to this are the two girls. And people will remember that iconic photograph of them leaving London, walking alongside each other. I think it was in a tube station, Joshua, Shamima and her two friends. What happened to those two other young women?
So these were her best friends, and they, you know, arrived in the caliphate with Shamima. They got married, and for a while, you know, they stayed in touch. Both of those girls are believed to be dead now. We went to the site where one of them was killed. We were able to track down the location, and we certainly know that one of them was, and we believe the other one to be deceased as well.
And going back then to your meetings with Shamima and your impressions of her, where is she living now? What are the conditions like where she is?
So in northeastern Syria, there are tens of thousands of people, if you like, that were associated with ISIS. This includes men, women, and indeed children. And they are held in a couple of different types of facilities. So the men tend to be held in a high secure prison. The women are held in sort of, if you imagine, refugee camps. They look very similar, except they're more like detention facilities. They're very dusty. They're sort of on the edge of the desert. And people do escape from these facilities. Now, Shamima lives in one of them at a camp called Rojj in northeastern Syria, amongst other ISIS women, in a sort of tent at the edge of the perimeter of the camp.
And what does she want? Is it a return? Does she want to leave that place, or does she want to return to Britain?
So she very much wants to leave. I think Shamima would say, look, I am here without trial. I've never been able to have my day in court. If, you know, I'm found guilty of something, then I will accept it. that she wants her day in court. And at the moment, she would say, I'm stuck in this camp with no way out. I've been here for years and it's an indefinite sentence, in essence. And she basically would say, I just want to have my day in court. Now, obviously, there is a large perspective in this country where people have a lot of anger towards her for what she's done and would rather she didn't return to the UK.
The appeal hearing, when are we going to hear its decision?
So these things can go on for a little while, but we sort of had a sneak preview that it might be in January or February of next year.
Okay, well, your podcast begins on the 10th of January, Joshua. It'll be released by the BBC and it's called I'm Not a Monster. And thank you very much, Joshua Baker, for talking
to
us today. Not at all. Let's take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.